Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good morning or afternoon or even late at night. Good night. No matter what time you are listening to this show, welcome to the Enchanted Kaleidoscope. I'm your host, Vicki Love, and my co-host today is Carl Kafer, part of the Deviant Legion Network that we are broadcasting over. And this is the first podcast for Enchanted Kaleidoscope of 2024. And if we're anything here at this podcast, we are people that like lists and shows that run for parts 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We did the Doctor Who series and others that I can't remember right now. So this is apropos for what the Enchanted Kaleidoscope does, and we are going to start this year with the authors of novels that Hollywood just adores. They love them. There are certain authors who write books, and this mostly male, of course, but a lot female, that Hollywood just can't get enough of. They write a book, Hollywood wants to produce it into a film, and that's because most of these people are just highly imaginative, and they take their fiction and they make it engaging for the general public. And by saying that, I mean that not always is the science the best, not always are the circumstances the best or the most true factual to life, but it's engaging for the audience and mostly fun. So what do you think of that assessment, Carl?
I think that's a good assessment. I'm really looking forward to this series. And also, I want to say it's really nice to have you back and welcome you back to Deviant Legion, Vicki. We're really glad to have you here.
Well, thank you. There were a lot of things last year that took me off the air. When you lose people in your life, it just kind of derails you for a while. And I'm really happy to finally have my brain back, at least a little bit, and can do this kind of thing again. I'm happy to be here. Okay, our first author that, and in fact, this is the whole... Michael Crichton is our first author, and it's because I was watching one of the films, one of my favorite films that was made from one of, if not the, my most favorite book of Michael Crichton. And so I started thinking about it before we talk about it. I was thinking about, wow, you know, Michael Crichton has written a lot of books that have been made into films. And then at the end of this this Blu-ray that I was watching of one of his films, or one of the films from one of his books, he had an interview, and it was rather long, 15, 20 minutes, and it was really great because it got into in-depth. And, you know, he started mentioning this one and that one and this one and that one, and everyone, of course, is always so, always wants to ask about Jurassic Park. But really, his interest and his novels go back way before Jurassic Park, 20 years actually, and or more. And so I thought about this idea. I talked to Carl, who is my liaison on the Deviant Legion Network, and voila, here we are. So our first author is Michael Crichton. And what did you say to me, Carl, when I said that to you? All right, talked it over with you.
Well, I thought it was a great choice. We of course, mentioned many other authors, and I'll let you choose from them. But Michael Crichton has so many great books, and of course, we know him under that but also he wrote books under pseudonyms, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But it's a great choice, and he has some of my favorite movies from his books, too, and we'll discuss that, too.
Okay. Well, first, I'd just like to start about a little bit about Michael Crichton himself. First, on his biography website, there is a quote, and his quote is just, I love it. Life is wonderful. It's a gift to be alive, to see the sun and breathe the air, and there isn't really anything else. Michael Crichton. It's so true. It's absolutely true. And that kind of spirit of enjoyment of life goes into his books, even when he's writing about something as dire as a plague or as crazy as a dinosaur eating somebody. He's still got at the overall ending is the joy of life. And that's, I just love Michael Crichton. And most all the pictures you ever see of Michael Crichton, he's smiling. That's because if you watch an interview, he is, he'll talk about things, answer questions, and in between, he's always smiling at the interviewer and engaged with the interviewer, not the camera. And I find that so human. I think that that's probably one of the reasons why Hollywood loved him so much. And so, oh, you must excuse Carl. It is springtime. I know that the calendar doesn't say spring has begun, but in the parts of the country where he lives and where I live, which are about 2,500 miles apart, spring in my area is just raging with the orchards, and it's just horrible outside. And his area, Carl, what's happening in your area?
Well, Memphis, we're just starting to have everything bloom. So the daffodils have started, and the tulip trees have started, the tulips, and just various things are budding. And I am new to this area. It's Memphis. So I'm getting used to everything, and I've been basically warned, like, oh, boy, you're going to be hit. So, yeah, it started here, too.
Yeah, so please excuse our sneezes and coughing and choking and all. It's just because it's that time of year. And so, okay, Michael Crichton. Michael Crichton came from terribly high-end wealthy family, but he did come from a pretty good family. And he graduated from Harvard summa cum laude, and sorry, dyslexic, and he received his medical degree from Harvard Medical School, which tells you right there that he's not just the average you and me. He's pretty smart. But in the interview I watched, his whole family, what they concentrated on early in life is where might I be able to make a good living in a career that I like. And so his very first thing that he ever wanted to do was be a writer. And he researched it. And he found out that only one in 200 writers makes a living. Now, that was back in the mid-20th century. It's not very much better now for us writers today, but anyway, in the mid-20th century. And so he just kept on writing, but he also researched medical school and doctors, and he's like, well, I could do that. And so, he could. He graduated from Harvard Medical School. But it served him. All the research he did and all the experience he got served his stories. And he was writing long stories when he was in late elementary, early middle school, and by high school. He hid it from everyone because being a writer is not nobody wants to hear their child wants to be a writer. And he hid it from everyone. But he was writing novels. And so he actually sent his first long piece out, and it was actually accepted. How about that? Yay for him.
Yes.
And so I just want to mention also that he taught anthropology, which means when you teach anthropology, that's a completely different discipline than medical school. And he taught that at Cambridge. And he also taught writing at MIT, which is, again, another discipline. So we're talking about a man who is super highly intelligent. But above all of that, he is super friendly, too. Okay? So let's get on to Michael Crichton's very first novel was called Odds On. And you can find these. If you search online, you can find all his books. You might have to pay a higher price, or they might be beat up in paperback, but you can find these. Now, his first three books that he wrote, Odds On, Scratch One, and Easy Go, were in, under a pseudonym called John Lang, because he was in medical school and he couldn't let his medical, his superiors know that he was writing books, because that was highly looked down upon. I encourage you to get the Andromeda Strain on Blu-ray and watch his interview if you are interested. It's probably on YouTube by now, too. I have no idea. But his pseudonym, he explains how he came up with the name John Lang. And so 1966, 67, 68, he's a published author, but he's still doing internships in medical school, okay? 1968 also saw him publish a book called A Case of Need, and that was under the pseudonym Jeffrey Hudson. And this won an Edgar Award and also was turned into a film. And so this was the turning point for Michael Crichton. He was a doctor, but this was his turning point, and he states that in the interview also. And then next comes the big breakthrough. I was a early teenager, and I was consuming books like crazy. Weren't you, Carl? You were.
Oh, absolutely.
You and I were
absolutely.
Both reading early. So by the time we get into high school or late middle school, we're consuming everything in the library. And I remember I was in Arizona at the time, and I remember picking up this book that had just come into the library called The Andromeda Strain, and I was highly into science fiction, of course. And here's this Andromeda Strain. What the heck's that? That sounds scary, and it sounds science fiction-y. And so I open it up, and I start reading it, and the very first page is of a fictional town called Piedmont, Arizona. And I'm like, I'm hooked. It's in my own state. What the heck? This is cool. I've never read anything like this before. That book scared the crap out of me. As a teenager, I never stopped watching the skies from that point on. I had to have been about 12 or 13. I already watched the skies because I lived in Arizona, the big sky, not Montana, Arizona. The sky lasts forever. So anyway, I read the book. Scared me to death, always afraid of being sick because I was a sickly child, always sick. I even had the measles. I had the measles vaccine, and I still got the measles. I was always sick. Andromeda Strain scared me to death. Did you read Andromeda Strain early on, Carl?
Oh, absolutely I did. Absolutely. I thought it was great. You know, the one thing I really liked about that book, and of course the film too, is that the approach is very, very low key and medical, and so it gets very, very detailed onto the various stages of how they're looking at this disease and what's happening and how they fix it and how things work out, and it's really, really. Just a fantastic read. It is. It goes very quickly.
Yes. But I would imagine that people these days wouldn't want to read it. I taught it once in a high school science class, and I was an English teacher, but I also was in a science academy, so I had English. We had English in the science academy, and I taught Andromeda Strain, and I thought the kids were going to hate it because it's 10th grade, sophomores, and they loved it. And I showed them the film, and they kept saying, remarking about how the film went right along with the story, the novel, and how closely they were linked. And the only thing that was different is that the film said New Mexico, and the book is Arizona.
No.
And what?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
And one of the reasons for that is that the filming was in New Mexico. They filmed it in New Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah, and so they were trying to be authentic. But then again, it also goes to the Nevada, too, when they go to the underground site. Now, the whole thing about what made Andromeda Strain so scary and so realistic, especially back in the 60s, and you have to remember that this is around the time of the Apollo program, around the time we're landing on the moon, and all the hubbub of satellites and everything. The story centers around a satellite that comes crashing down to Earth that was not supposed to come crashing down to Earth. And this satellite was a secret program by the military, but also it comes crashing down to Earth with a secret passenger along. And this passenger kills everybody it comes in contact with. And it's done so well. The book starts out just as the movie starts out, and it types across the screen, you know, these are records, factual records of an event that actually happened, and this will be publicized soon, something like that. So it brings you down into your present day. Into the scary stuff. Remember, that was the Cold War. We were all so scared of nuclear bombs. But, hey, you know what? There are other things to be even more scared about, or as scared about, as nuclear bombs is also the crashing to Earth meteors with organic life on it. And, you know, we kind of still have those problems. Anyway, that was Michael Crichton's first big giant kaboom to moviegoers, people who don't read but now have seen this movie and know the name or remember the name Michael Crichton. Okay, I was going to skip, but you want to stop here, Carl, and mention a few things?
Yes, I do. First thing about the Andromeda Strain, one of the interesting things about the production of the film is that the producers of the film, the studio, wanted big names. And both the director and Crichton did not want big names. They wanted the people to be just like you and I. And they didn't want any, like, you know, it's Burt Lancaster or it's this or that. So the cast is not a well-known cast. I mean, there are a couple
right.
of people there, Arthur Hill, David Wayne,
yeah.
Paula Kelly, James Olsen. I mean, they're good mm-hmm. actors. But that, to me, adds to the verisimilitude of the whole film that, you know, it's these people that you would never know get together, these scientists, and they figure things out. And I think that's a really good thing. Now, the other thing I want to do mention very briefly, you know, you talked about A Case of Need, which was one of his novels
yes.
that he did under nom de plume. Thank you.
So yeah, John Lang.
Yeah, yeah. So. That was published in 69. Now, I was very, very much into private detective fiction. And I read that novel. That was the, and I didn't know it was Michael Crichton. It was under another name. And I loved it that it was a whodunit, why done it, in a hospital, which I had never thought of, right? You know, reading all these, you know, Raymond Chandler and so on and so forth. And I loved it. I loved it. And then after Andromeda Strain, there's a number there's a number of movies that came out from him that he even wrote under a pseudonym or based on that. And one of them is called The Carey Treatment, which is based on that novel. Now, he has basically disowned it because the studio basically, and Blake Edwards, who directed it, came in and re-edited it. But even under those circumstances, I saw the film, and I thought it was great. And, you know, you talk about a cast. So the whole idea is that this doctor comes in from Boston, to Boston from the West Coast. He has a very good friend who's been basically he's been charged with murder because he performed an abortion. And then he's murdered, the doctor, his friend. And that's played by James Hong, the great Asian American actor.
Who is, can I just say something? Who is also in Colossus, the Forbin project. Now, that's a much earlier film, several years earlier than Andromeda Strain, but he was, that cast in that film was a cast of all different ethnicities, and I love that. I love it. He's in the film. He's a scientist. Okay, go on. Sorry.
But also, you know, that's true of the Andromeda Strain because you've got the great actress Paula Kelly, who was African American.
Yes.
And she has a big part in that too. And so,
huge part.
There's a lot to that. Yeah.
And then also another thing about. The what you were saying about the detective thing is that Arthur Hill's character even says something like, we're going to approach this as if we are detectives because
it's
a total unknown. And so, yeah, I thought that Michael Crichton is one of the first, maybe, I'm not sure on this, who brought together two really engaging fictions, and that was the detective story and the science fiction story together.
And the medical thing. Mm-hmm.
And
so the
what
other,
TV show the other, did that? Spawn.
Do you know what? House, perhaps?
Nope. ER. In the 1990s. ER. The great ER that spawned a million stardoms and offshoots in shows, you know, House, Chicago Hope, all those. ER started it all. And that was Michael Crichton.
So the other thing I want to just mention briefly is I talk about The Carey Treatment, which I love that movie. I truly do. And it's, though it's as I said, it was sort of like bastardized by the studio. And by the way, Blake Edwards, who directed Carey Treatment, basically did a whole thing in SOB on how they fucking screwed that movie. So that's kind of cool. But there are a couple other movies during this time. So Andromeda Strain came out in 71. In 1972, these are all Michael Crichton-based movies. Dealing or the Berkeley to Boston, 40 Brick Lost Bag Blues. Pursuit, which is based on the novel Binary, as John Lang. And Extreme Close-Up, which he actually wrote the script to. None of these are you know, maybe Dealing's interesting, but he wrote that under the nom de plume Michael Douglas. But because of Andromeda Strain, that really like propelled him as a writer, screenwriter, and then definitely later as a director. So we got
right.
The Andromeda Strain is the movie that absolutely brought him into the forefront. So that's all I wanted to say. So you go ahead.
Okay, well, if we're looking at IMDb, then after a couple of these, the next one, 1973, is Westworld. And Westworld has many, many firsts in it. And Westworld was written by Michael Crichton in his real name. And it was directed by Michael Crichton. This is the first film that he directed. He had creative control over the entire film. This film was also one of the very first, if not first, films to have a CGI in it. And so the movie, if you are not familiar with even the HBO Westworld, the movie is about a place where very, very rich people can go to a Western town, and you can live out the gunslinger life if you would like, because all the population of the town that you have gone to are androids, and they are there to serve you no matter what your pleasure might be. And so in this film, the great Yul Brynner played the man in black, gunslinger, and things got a little out of control with these android robot AI guys. And it's a science fiction Western, which, again, Michael Crichton is bringing two great genres together to make it super-duper interesting and engaging. And this was a great hit, too, even though they did a second movie, Future World, which was not quite as well accepted. this was a great advancement in movie-going experiences, plus it's solidly now Michael Crichton is definitely Hollywood. Michael Crichton is, his name is gold, and Hollywood loves him. Would you say that's about right, Carl?
I would say that's about right. There are two things I want to mention. Future World, he had nothing to do with.
Yeah.
Had nothing to do with.
Yeah, it was their ripoff. Right.
Yeah. It wasn't a ripoff. It was considered a sequel to Westworld, but he wouldn't write it, and the studio decided, okay, we're going to do it, and it's not good. The other thing, too, about this that I do want to mention, yes, it is some Western and sci-fi, but it's also mentioned in the script, and there's actually a scene or two where there are other parts of the park, where there's a Roman world, and there's a medieval world. And I think that sort of building then brought it into the TV series later, much later. And I wanted just to make that point,
right,
too, that it wasn't just Westworld. So that's where
right.
the primary acting is.
So then TV had their first real grab at a Michael Crichton series, only lasted 3 episodes. It was called Insight. I really don't know much about that. But the next one is The Terminal Man. And The Terminal Man is a film that is, I can't find it. Dang it. A film that was very widely hyped. I remember this really well, because the film was a book. I read the book, because I was and still am a reader. And this was Michael Crichton's second novel under his own name and his 12th book overall, okay? Overall, he's been writing as John Lang mostly, and then Michael Douglas, and then Michael Crichton. And Terminal Man was hyped up, and it came out on my birthday. That's why I remember it so well. And that was 1974 that the book came out, 1975 when the film came out, I think.
No, 74. Came out.
Okay.
Well, came out late in 74, so they spent about 6 months
right.
on it.
Right. And so do you have anything you want to say about Terminal Man? Because I didn't like the movie so much. I thought the movie went too far out of the novel.
Okay, so there's definite tension. The director is Mike Hodges. Mike Hodges was very much a gritty guy. He did Get Carter. Now, he also liked to do other things, too. He ended up doing Flash Gordon in the 80s. But most of his stuff was very gritty gangster movies. And he's hired to do this with Crichton, and they really fought about the script. Hodges...
Yeah, you can tell.
You can tell. And they also fought about, you know, with the studio about who was cast. So this production had a lot of problems to it. And unfortunately, the script is muddled. You know, not letting Crichton do what he wanted and Hodges just to direct. Hodges basically put his fingers in where he shouldn't have. And it's the one
right.
movie of his that I really think he was hired wrong. They should have gotten somebody else for this. Now, that being said, there's still a lot of good to it, as far as I'm concerned. I think Spiel does a really good job, and Richard Dysart, too. I think Joan Hackett is a slightly miscast. But it was still something that I really, really liked seeing because, you know, you've got this situation. It's basically a man has seizures. He agrees to experimental microcomputers inserted into his brain. And so it's this whole medical...
They're electrodes.
You know, yeah, electrodes. Medical, sort of like a horror story.
It's kind of like a Frankenstein story.
Yeah, exactly. And so I really like the idea, but I don't think the execution was that well done, unfortunately. So there you go.
Well, you know... In real life, that's happening right now if you want to connect it to the present. You know, Michael Crichton was so – his ideas, sometimes people are like, that's so far-fetched. Well, far-fetched no more. Elon Musk just implanted his company, whatever it's called, brain power, whatever, I don't know. Just implanted electrodes and – computer chips or whatever into a person's brain and they called it a success. This just happened 2-3 weeks ago. And it's been a long time building because Elon Musk tried this before with terrible results. So here's the deal. Michael Crichton was not only just a writer, just a doctor, he's got 100 accolades. He was also a visionary, much like Ray Bradbury, who will do at some point. Ray Bradbury was a great visionary. We live in a Bradbury world right now, and along with a couple other guys. And Michael Crichton, absolutely. The only thing we don't have that we regular humans don't know is any kind of dinosaurs walking around. But there are scientists over on the other side of the world that are trying to bring to life a baby woolly mammoth. So Jurassic Park can't be too far behind. So anyway,
no.
Terminal Man was actually a flop at the movies. A lot of people went out and saw it like the first weekend, and then everyone's like, oh, okay, that's not what I was expecting. And so it didn't do so great. It did great enough, but not up to Andromeda Strain, okay? And so go ahead. You have something to say?
No, not at all. Keep going.
No? Okay. All right. Then the next comes coma. In filmography comes coma. That also was not a big giant hit, but it was more, for me personally, it was better than Terminal Man because comas are mysterious. And the, you know, bringing somebody back to life, kind of the Frankenstein thing again, it just seemed kind of realistic and extremely scary. And so coma did a little better at the box office. Plus, it had all these great people in it, right? Michael Douglas, Rip Torn, Jenny Bijol, however you say her name, Richard Widmark, who doesn't love him. Just what?
Jean-Pierre Bujold.
Yes, who was almost the Starship Enterprise's, the Starship Voyager's captain. That's a bit of trivia. She almost was, but she said she couldn't do it. She was on set for a day or something, and then she goes, "This ain't my cup of tea." So anyway, that's another story for another time. So then next comes, after we have coma, which Michael Crichton still, he's not going to stop writing books, okay? This is not Michael Crichton stopping on his books. He continues to write books, and he continues to get, they sell. He's sold over 200 million books, okay? And he's written over 200 books, something like that. It's just, he was a prolific writer. He'd have an idea and he'd write it. And another thing I want to mention about his books, if you go to read them, they're very people-friendly books because they're written not quite in the first person, but in this way that you can just place yourself into the story. So it's the language is extremely friendly. There's lots of terminology, but it always grounds the book into your own reality. I don't know how to explain it, but it's really good. Okay, now, we all know that Michael Crichton wrote Jurassic Park, and that's the first thing we all think of. And Andromeda Strain and Terminal Man, Coma even, we think of Michael Crichton in the genre of science fiction. But when I mentioned this to a family member the other day, they're like, "He wrote that?" Because this happens to be one of that person's favorite movies. And so he wrote The Great Train Robbery. And The Great Train Robbery was made into a film in 1979. And now that's completely different than what he has been writing. It's got no medical. It's got no science fiction. Did you ever see that movie, Carl?
Not only did I see this movie, this is my favorite Michael Crichton film, by far.
Well, then go right ahead and start.
Okay, and I will also give a shout-out to Stephen Ronquillo, because Stephen and I were talking about this. We were talking about your upcoming show, and he said, "I love that movie, too." So both of us. It's just a wonderful caper movie. You know, caper movies, and it's set in the 1850s, and it's got Sean Connery at the top of his game.
Yeah.
Seriously, at the top of his game. And it has Donald Sutherland, who I also love, and Leslie Ann Down. And it's just a wonderful, it's a light, you know, I mean, there's tension to it, to this, to what they're doing. But it's set up like, you know, they're going to do it, right?
Right.
And it's just nice and light and fluffy, and it's so different than everything else, and it's such a breath of fresh air, and it's a wonderful film, and it's very witty. The dialogue is just fantastic, particularly between Connery and Sutherland. They play off each other like it's so much fun. It's like so much like me and Steven, almost.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really, really good. It is by far my favorite Crichton film, particularly of the ones he directed.
Okay. Yes.
So there you go.
This was another, and this happens to be another one of those successful Michael Crichton directorial films, novel to film. He also, what am I trying to see here? Oh, I can't get it. Did he write the screenplay for this too? Do you know?
Yes, absolutely. He wrote the novel and the screenplay, and he directed. So this is all Michael
and
Crichton.
So you have Westworld, that was a huge hit at the time, not huge, but Train Robbery, which was also, I mean, the world loved Train Robbery, the great Train Robbery, okay? And then Sean Connery, how do you get Sean Connery in your movie? Well, especially at the time that he's still James Bond, right? How do you get him in your movie?
He's actually out of James Bond at this time. He is out of James Bond.
It's 75. Sorry about that, folks.
79.
Yeah, but he's just, the book was published in 75. Sorry. I have too many windows
movie
open,
in
I
79.
Think.
Yeah.
And so this movie is definitely something, if you like Michael Crichton's films, and you haven't seen The Great Train Robbery, I would definitely advise you to watch it. Just, I think Amazon has it. In fact, I know Amazon has it. Might have to pay $3.99 or something, but still, it would be worth it. It's a great film. And also, here's another thing about this film is that he's mixing that kind of Western type genre in with the because Westerns are fast, and they're capers, like what you say. A lot of them are, like Jesse James, you know, robbing trains and all that kind of stuff, the name of the film. I mean, you just have this great combination of different types of genres all twisted together into a great story. So, yes,
I want to mention very briefly is we talked earlier about the Andromeda Strain and how it was a medical mystery and you know, the attention to detail. Okay, so when you get to a heist movie, the attention to detail is extremely important. And so this isn't, you know, outlaws robbing a train and that sort of thing. This is really like everyone has a part to do, and it all comes together as clockwork. And this is one of the things that Crichton's really good at in terms of taking a plot and manipulating all the widgets and that to have sort of this Rube Goldberg machine just run so smoothly. And that's what makes this different than any great heist movie, you know, how it's all, you know, a con man movie where they're doing all
this stuff.
They do the same thing here.
Any kind of Agatha Christie, you know, or, I was just thinking of someone else and it went out of my mind when I said Agatha Christie, but, that's what makes Andromeda Strain so great, is it has really great characters. You get to know little bits and pieces of characters, especially these little bits and pieces of their personalities that actually either help or hinder the investigation of what is this foreign substance, why is it killing, and how can we stop it? I mean, it's all whodunit, but every single character, even minor characters, have this important part in the whole outcome of the story. And that's what Michael Crichton does it so well. I don't know how many times I've read and reread Jurassic Park. The reason why I love it so much, and I wish the film would have followed more with, and And I like Steven Spielberg. You do not. We can get into that in a minute. But I wish the film would have followed more with the book, because I have no qualms about the movie, it still had details in it that would have enhanced the movie so much more had they allowed Michael Crichton himself to fix more things in the film. And so,
right.
So yes, Michael Crichton is an Agatha Christie of our time, is a great caper writer of our time. So that's why we love his movies so much. So that was a good point, Carl. Really good point.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey, I come up with one every so often, kid.
Yes. Okay, so now there's another jump into TV land with Beyond Westworld, which I remember this well because I was a young adult, as you were, very young adult, 1980, and it only had 5 episodes, and it was it didn't make it to a series, okay? So Michael Crichton is still kind of not being allowed to do what he does best on TV, and so these shows that have his name attached to them are failing. Okay, next comes a movie called Looker. I don't know that movie, but you probably do, Carl.
I do. It's basically three models out of 4 have had plastic surgery done by this doctor, and they're dead. And neither the cops nor the doctor believe they're suicide. So it's all, again, his mystery sense of it with a sci-fi sort of soupçon on it. And for me, this one doesn't work. This one, and I think one of the reasons is I think that the main female character, who's played by Susan Day, she's just not that good in this film. She really isn't.
No, I don't think you're talking about Cynthia Rhodes, not Susan Day. You're talking about Cynthia Rhodes.
Yeah. But Finney and Coburn.
Sorry. I'm on.
No, I was talking about Susan Day. But Finney and Coburn, they're good, but the script, it just doesn't work for me. It just doesn't. I know people who like it a lot better than I do, but this one didn't work for me. So that's all
then,
I got to say.
Looker, Susan Day was a TV actress, not a film actress. Maybe that was the problem, because there were really distinctions between people back then. A lot of our TV actors of today can jump onto film and go back to TV and vice versa. But back then, you just didn't see that crossover that much until – And speaking of that, comes the next film, Runaway, with, I can't think of his name. His face is
Tom
right
Selleck.
There.
Tom Selleck,
who, is definitely a huge TV star, but has never really been able to make the jump to feature film. And I remember seeing this film, and I didn't like it at all. I didn't buy into it. Even though it's robots and everything, I think it was the robots themselves in the film that just didn't get it for me. I was reading too much on Bradbury, and I've had too many imaginary robots in my head for them to put robots on the film up on film that just didn't seem to work the way they were supposed to. So maybe that's why CGI is so popular today.
Well, all I've got to say is if you have imaginary robots still in your head, perhaps there's some medicine you can take.
I like my imaginary robots now. I don't need medicine.
Never mind.
They keep me company.
Okay. When the only compelling thing in the movie is Gene Simmons from Kiss. Then there is something wrong.
Well, you know, here's that thing about, robots jumping. Anyway, the one thing about that is then, you know, TV execs are not really good at figuring out what the public wants to see on film. And so, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to take the likes of Tom Selleck, who's a handsome man. I'm not going to deny any of that. And he's a good actor. I'm not going to deny that. But they're trying to take people from TV to film, and they're not giving them good scripts. They're giving them silly scripts. Sorry, Michael Crichton, your books are not silly. Scripts made from your books can be silly. And so, yeah, that, you know, let's take Gene Simmons. You know, he's in Kiss. Let's bring him into a movie. Let's just try to get the public out there no matter what. I can just hear the brainstorming on that one.
I think you're missing something here, because the movies we're talking about, Looker, Runaway, which aren't top-notch, they were written specifically for the screen by Crichton. They weren't based on books by him. When you get the movies that are based on books, there's a lot more to it, I think. I think that's where the delineation is. At least that's my supposition on that.
You know, there's a lot of people who would say you're right, because writing a script is way different than writing a book, absolutely, positively.
Exactly.
And also, look at the years. Looker is 91. Runaway
81.
Is 94.
81 and 84.
Yes, and 84. Okay, but during that time also, he was writing other books. And they maybe weren't being published then, but the ones that are published in the mid-80s and the late-80s were all being written back then, okay? Because it takes a lot longer for a novel to be written than a screenplay to be written.
Yeah.
So if you're writing two at the same time, I can see where one's going to be a little bit not as good as the other. And I would say that he had to fudge a little on his screenplays.
Well, his screenplays, too. These were both, you know, he was commissioned to do this. So he was given a certain amount of money, and he had to pull it together in a certain amount of time. So you're absolutely right about that. It's a lot different, and the time frame is a lot different. With a novel, you've got a lot more time, and you've got a lot more input with your editors at the publishing house and so on and so forth. You don't have that input with studio execs, because they'll tell you what you want, what they want, and fuck you if you don't get it, right?
Exactly. Okay, and then on top of writing screenplays and writing books, Michael Crichton, loved by the industry so much, is now asked to write a video game. You know, because in the 80s, the PlayStation 1 came out, and so now video games are not just scroll games and not just point and shoot or like Tetris. Now games are starting to be story based, and so now Michael Crichton is asked to write a video game, and it was called Amazon. I know nothing about this at all. Probably wasn't on the PlayStation, that's why I don't know anything about it. But just imagine, here you are, Michael Crichton, loving to write, and somebody asks you, well, you know, here's a new writing opportunity, brand new to the field, brand new for everyone, writing stories for video games. Want to give it a crack? And, of course, Crichton's going to say, yeah, I'm going to do this. So I wish there was somebody out there who could call in and say, hey, I know that Amazon game and could help us out with that. But just thinking about all of that is it, that's a lot of writing. And so I see that there's this gap between 84 and 93, okay, of the novels. And Michael Crichton was writing his great novel, Jurassic Park. He set aside TV, he set aside video games, screenplays, and he wrote Jurassic Park, which, like what I've said, I don't know how many times, I love the book. I've lent my book out to people. I love that book because it is so rich in detail. It is a fantastically envisioned scenario of if we take our genetics that far and what could possibly happen. And it doesn't matter if we did it with viruses, bacteria, or actually animals. It would be a disaster because none of those kinds of things from the past belong on Earth now. And what can I say? Jurassic Park made Michael Crichton literally a household name. Did you ever read the book?
No, I never. Well, let me say, I didn't finish it. Let's just put it that way. I had started it, and then things got in the way, and I've always forgotten to go back to it. Because the movie came out, oh, okay, fine. But, you know, I should read the book.
It's really engaging. It's really – and then if you like the movie as much as I like the movie, and you go back after you see the movie and read the book, you're like, why didn't they put that in there? That is so much better than what they did. And, you know, of course, I'm sure, you know – studio execs and budgets and everything, but still, think about the characters in Jurassic Park. Every single one of them, you know, by the end of the book, you know, each one, and their place in this whole story and the outcome of the whole story and what they did or didn't do to bring about that outcome. This is Michael Crichton's genius. Not only was he a visionary with science and medical and everything, he was just really good at pegging characters within the story. And that goes back to the Great Train Robbery, right?
Oh, yeah. And even before that, that's true of Andromeda Strain.
Yeah.
You know, the characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
I still can't get enough of that, of Andromeda Strain, not the television show. Now, the television series came out in the mid-2000s, I think. That series was successful in its own way, and people liked it. But those of us who had read the book and liked the movie, we still find that the movie is better. And they what they did was they expanded characters for a miniseries, right? Characters that only had a chapter in Andromeda Strain, you have to understand, chapters are different in that it's this happened, then this happened, then this happened, then this happened before they get in with the scientists and the doctors to try to figure out what it is. So in these different chapters of this happened, then this happened, then this happened, they took a couple of those characters and expanded their expanded them for the series. And the great Andre Brouwer, who just passed away a couple months ago, he was in the series. He's one of the stars of the series. And he was great, okay? I'm not saying don't watch the series and that the series is far off of what Crichton wrote in the novel. It's not. It's just not as good as the film. And none of those are as good as the book. How's that?
I would go further and say that the miniseries, well, the movie is absolutely a great film. The miniseries, however, is a slightly polished turd. I did not like it at all. And same with the Manchurian Candidate, too, when they did the miniseries. And that, what a piece of shit. Okay, enough. I'm being quiet now.
Yeah. Okay, I've seen many miniseries that have destroyed my favorite science fiction novels. And I just don't put Andromeda Strain in that same category. It's decent enough for me. It's decent enough. I'm not saying it's great. And Andre Brouwer is just, you know, he's so good in anything, so he's worth watching. And there's a couple of others in there that do a good job. The crazy wife part doesn't really fit story. So there's some auxiliary characters like the I don't mind the young couple, the teenagers, because of what happens to them. But there are some things that are way different, like the nuclear bomb thing. But anyway, it's not as bad as Carl says. Okay. All right. Jurassic Park comes, and now Michael Crichton is way up there on the. And so then we have this this TV series, Equinox. Again, dump. Bad. Doesn't happen. Okay. Then we have Rising Sun with who again? Sean Connery. And Michael Crichton wrote the screenplay also, and I found myself thinking, I don't like this movie when I was in the theater. Maybe it was the director. I'm not sure.
I have, again,
Wesley Snipes, isn't it?
Yeah, I like this movie. I like this movie a lot. Director is Philip Kaufman, who is very, very much a controlling director. Of course, he then, put himself in with the writers, along with Michael Crichton, who co-wrote with Michael Backus. Let's face it, any movie that has Harvey Keitel basically unhinged is a very good movie, generally. I love him. at least it's interesting to watch.
Well, there's also lots of great... Tagawa's really great. Mako's great. Ray Weiss. I mean, come on. There's some really... Stan Shaw. I mean, there's just really great actors in this film.
Ray Weiss is in this. And anything that Mako and Ray Weiss is in, it's going to be worth watching. The acting in this is just tremendous. It really, really is.
Yeah, but Tagawa's so good, too. If you want to see him in something great, watch. If you want to see him in something great, watch Man in the High Castle. He just steals it, man. Every scene he's in, you can't stop watching him. He's so, so great. And Man in the High Castle will be coming up later in one of our series parts for Hollywood Loves Authors because of Philip K. Dick, but that's later.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so a thumbs up for this movie.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Kind of a gangster movie, huh?
Yeah, and it's a gangster movie, and it also is a crime film that they're trying to figure out who did what. It's really good. I like this movie a lot.
And so this is Sean Connery. He looks like he did in The Rock. And this is a great look for Sean Connery. He looks really super freaking handsome. So it's a good movie. I'm not into gangster. That's probably why I don't like it so much. But that's okay. That's good. Good characters, though.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I lost my place. Do, 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 do. I lost my place.
You got the Jurassic Park video game, and then you've got Disclosure.
Yeah. Oh, okay. It's my, you guys, last night I was on a Zoom meeting with a job that I'm doing, and the power went out. My laptop has just like had a nervous breakdown, and so it's just jumping all over the place. I apologize so much for that. You know what happens when your laptop has a nervous breakdown. Doesn't even have an AI in it yet. It hallucinates all the time. Okay, so we have, Jurassic Park Rampage. My kids played that all the time. It was so much fun. Oh, my gosh, that was a fun game, okay? It was a really fun game. But, I mean, really, they used Michael Crichton's characters, and so that's why Michael Crichton got credit in that, right? His name,
right.
The name Jurassic Park and all that. But let me say, that was a fun game. Okay, and I think that was on Sega Genesis, too. 94? Yeah, Sega Genesis. So then comes Congo. Oh, Lord. What'd you think of Congo?
No, you're missing one. You're missing one.
I am?
You're missing Disclosure. Yes, Disclosure.
Oh, sorry. Go backwards.
And that's all we need to go on. So keep going with Congo because this is...
Okay, what was Disclosure, though? What?
Okay, basically, it's Michael Douglas as a computer specialist, and he's sued for sexual harassment.
Right.
And it's
right.
Yeah, and it's Demi Moore, you know, going after him, and it's like, ugh.
Right.
Yuck.
That was not a good story. I don't know what failed there. That was probably I never read that book. Now we're getting later into Michael Crichton.
Basically, think of a bad knockoff of Fatal Attraction.
That's what this movie is. I saw the movie. I didn't like it, but I never read the book. And that's unusual because I usually read the books. And then, but Congo, I read the book, Congo. I read it, and it was an okay book. It seemed a little rushed to me, but I didn't like the movie.
Okay. I'll give you what Stephen Ronquillo said about it. He went to see the movie because in the trailer, Bruce Campbell is there. And you go see Bruce Campbell. Bruce Campbell's in a movie, a big movie. He dies in 5 minutes. And Stephen's like, what the fuck?
Well, it's a strange combination of actors: Tim Curry, Ernie Hudson, Joe Don Baker. Laura Linney is the main character. There's just, I don't know. I didn't like it. I don't like monkeys very much. So and Frank Marshall was the director. You're expecting better. But I wonder why Frank Marshall was the director, because they have,
I have no idea,
puppets or something.
Frank Marshall is not who you're thinking of. It's not from the Muppets. Frank Marshall is not from the Muppets.
Okay. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I just, I like movies that are upcoming on this list. Congo just didn't hit me well. And I read the book, like I said, and the book was okay to me. In fact, I set it down halfway through. I remember this really clearly. I set the book down because halfway through it, I'm just like, I don't know. And then I picked it up and finished it, and I'm like, well, probably never read that one again.
Yeah,
and that's
I agree.
True. And so then, but as we go now, I really liked this one, Twister. I really liked the film because I've been in a tornado before. And now where you live, Carl, you might be in a tornado too. And
oh, I've been in tornadoes before.
One that hit your house?
No.
I was in a tornado that hit my house.
It didn't hit the house, but came damn close. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I can tell you that you've never heard a sound like a tornado over the top of your house. It's just one of the most scary things I've ever lived through. I've lived through quite a few scary things. I almost drowned once, so I under a waterfall, actually, and so I've heard scary things. the whole thing about tornadoes, you know, a long time ago, I thought about being a tornado chaser. I wanted to, because I was only 12 when the tornado hit us, and it really, really struck me, something like that. And so this movie I really like. I don't care who doesn't like it. Michael Crichton wrote it, and I like it. I like the characters. I like the way that the CGI was starting to make things look so real. I just like everything about this movie. It might be a little too long, just a little too long, but that's okay with me. It's one of those go-to movies I watch about once a year.
This movie, the reason this movie works, there are three of them, but the main reason this works is the characters. You care about
right.
the characters.
Right.
And you care
right.
about what happens to them. The second reason this works, it's fucking Bill Paxton. Okay? Just
yes.
right there.
Yes.
Okay? And also I'm a big fan of Helen Hunt. So it really does
yes.
work well because of the characters, the dialogue too. The dialogue
the
is very witty.
The dialogue's really good.
Yeah. So it all just comes together in this film.
It's a Michael Crichton character movie, character story. And this
right.
is what he does best. I think we've established that. He does this best. He brings interesting characters in. You get attached to them. You don't want to see things happen to them. And fantastic, scary things happen. And, yeah. And just like the next one, The Lost World, Jurassic Park, The Lost World. Holy cow. Holy cow. What a movie. I thought Jurassic Park could not be more fantastic at all. And, of course, you know, Steven Spielberg, I've watched him on interviews about how Lost World had to be, it had to top Jurassic Park. It had to. And so that whole bus scene where the mama T-Rex and the daddy T-Rex come to get their baby T-Rex because the humans
mm-hmm.
are so stupid as to have the baby T-Rex in the buses. It's like, oh God, that was, I still, when I think about that scene, and then I have just fast forwarded through the DVD to get to that part because those scenes are so incredible. And then my favorite character gets eaten, of course. it was just a really exciting film. And then bringing the raptors in to top the T-Rex. The T-Rex topped the raptors. I mean, it was a great, great manipulation of audience expectations. And I just thought it was a fantastic film. I never read the book. Oh, wait, yes, I did. I have the book. Sorry, I just don't remember reading it. But, yeah, I have it in hardcover, actually. Dang it, I forgot about that. Yeah, because the movie outpaced the book, I think. And so did you hate the movie or like the movie, Carl?
I think this is the best of the Jurassic Park. I do think that through this, it starts to really go downhill.
Yeah, yeah,
that's my opinion.
Yeah. Well, Jurassic World also was the not the screenplay wasn't written by Michael Crichton,
no.
And so there are some differences. There's some real differences here between Jurassic Park and Jurassic World. Still, Michael Crichton wrote the book, and then they made the movie, Steven Spielberg. Next on the list is more video games. That is awesome. Then comes the movie Sphere. And for what it's worth, the book is way better.
Agreed.
I really like the book. I think I've read it twice, maybe three times. Can't remember. And it's, again, the whole thing is, why didn't they use this instead of doing this? Michael Crichton knows what he's doing when he's writing a story. Why don't you use more of him in the screenplay than less of him? So Sphere was, I mean, it's a decent film, and I know a lot of people that like that film. They like it a lot. There's a mystery. What's at the bottom of the ocean? And we build a sphere to go see what is down there. And it is kind of scary because the ocean, we still don't know what's in the ocean, really. And so it's a good mystery. It's a mystery. It's a mystery novel, actually, a mystery story with some pretty good characters. But, you know, Sharon Stone, I think, was miscast in this film.
That's putting it mildly. Mildly. Mildly.
Okay, well, you know.
He was a fucking disaster in this movie. Seriously.
Okay, we have another video game, a Jurassic Park video game, of course. These video games just keep making money, and whoever can put them out are going to put them out. They have to pay Michael Crichton, though, and I'm sure he's happy, or he was happy. Rest his soul, boy. Okay, now comes one of my favorite movies that lots of people don't like. But I'm telling you, I love this movie. You know why? Because the characters are engaging and the story is so freaking cool. And that is what is called for the movie, the film going public, The 13th Warrior. In book, in novel form, it's called The Eaters of the Dead, which is a better title. But The 13th Warrior is still a good film. Antonio Banderas, at first I thought he was horribly miscast also, but after watching it several times, I like his wide-eyed innocence in this. He's just too old to be wide-eyed innocent, and yet this whole new world that he comes to love, he's like a child at first. And so I don't know. At first I couldn't accept him as the 13th warrior, but as I watched it more times and just love the story, especially the Northmen, they have great actors playing these wonderful characters. I just can't help but love that movie.
It is to me probably the hidden gem in all of this. It's a really, really good movie. And I got to give credit for John McTiernan was casting the film, and he was talking to Michael Crichton, and they wanted something for Melchizedek. I can never say that. Melchizedek, okay? And they came up with somebody who had been retired for a number of years, and they talked him into it, and fucking Omar Sharif in like his last role. It's just fantastic.
It's not his last role, but he was getting pretty old by then. But, and all the you've seen some of these actors, these I want to call them Icelandic actors. They're not all, they're all from the top of the world, but they're all from all different, like Norway.
They Scandinavian.
Yeah, that's, there you go. I couldn't think of the word for some reason.
No, I gotcha.
I apologize. I apologize. Yeah, but there's some great actors in this movie, and they all bring this really scary thing to life. And the scary thing, it's kind of a Beowulf-type movie. So if you like the story of Beowulf, and I'm not talking about the film Beowulf, which was an atrocity. It was horrible. And Ray Winston is one of my favorite people, and he was stuck in this movie. No, the real story of Beowulf. Read some literature and read Beowulf. This movie has a thread of that in it, where a king that his people are being devastated by this group of what they consider mythological creatures have come, and they come and destroy their longhouses and all, and he needs help. All his soldiers have all been killed. He needs help, so he asked help from another king, a very great king who has a reputation of winning great battles against mythical creatures. And so Antonio Banderas' character is on this other kind of journey and just happens to get mixed up in this at the exact right moment when this king goes over to help the other king. And it's just a really super wonderful movie that has that Beowulf type thread in it. I love it. I love it, love it, love it. And we could stop right there. We've already said so many movies, but we're going to keep going because we still haven't even got to Michael Crichton's great, his TV, you know, his TV gold. So anyway, 13th Warrior, more video games. And then this is what I find really funny, that Timeline was a video game first. Before it became a movie, Timeline was a video game written by and directed by Michael Crichton. And so this video game, this is, I think, maybe the first time that a video game was made into a movie. And so, anyway, so Timeline, the video game, came out. What the heck? Oh, my, I'm sorry. My... It just jumped.
What have you got here?
I'm so sorry. It just jumped. My whole thing just jumped. Okay, I'm back down to Congo again. Okay, Timeline was 2000. Okay, then Jurassic Park came out, and that was kind of an iffy film. They got Sam Neill to come back. What a great, 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 great actor! But the whole movie was messed up. They were using Michael Crichton characters, and Michael Crichton gets a, you know, part of the golden pot. Yeah, the credits. But then comes some video games again. Then comes the big Universal Studios theme park, which I went to and was a lot of fun. Then comes the novel Timeline. Now Michael Crichton's back into writing again. So he takes and the actors in this are all up and comings, right? He takes the unique story of the video game that he wrote and directed, and he writes it into a novel now, which is totally backwards from what he was doing before, but he's Michael Crichton, a great genius at what he's doing. And he comes up, this is another one of my mother's favorite movies, like The Great Train Robbery. She loves this movie. I watch her, I see her watching this movie all the time. And, it, of course, time travel. We all want to do time travel, right? And so we have some really actors like Gerard Butler. This is where his whole action movie stardom started. Paul Walker, unfortunately, we know what happened to him. And David Thewlis, I love him so much. There's just a lot of Neil McDonough. I just watched a miniseries he was in just last night. And so,
and you're,
I mean,
forgetting
had,
my,
yeah?
You're forgetting
Who,
my
Conley?
Favorite actor in it. Fucking, and he's great.
Billy
it's the only reason to watch it, as far as I'm concerned. But that's
oh no, 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 no. There's other people, and so no, it's a, it's a lot of fun. The whole thing about this movie is that it's a lot of fun. It's not based on any kind of science. It's based on that whole what is that, a 13-year-old in King Arthur's court? What is that called?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's it. It's like that. And at that time in the early 2000s, there were a lot of time-leaping stories out there from people from the past jumping into New York present day and vice versa. It was just a thing. It was a genre thing back then. So this fit perfectly and was – I never saw it at the movie theater, though. Only saw it when it came out on DVD, which
right.
back then DVDs were the thing, the video stores, the thing. God, I miss my mm-hmm. video store. I hate everything online. I hate it. Okay, so timeline. Andromeda Strain, the series, okay? What is Michael Crichton working on most in his life at this point in time? ER, the TV show that was a gigantic, gigantic hit, okay? That's what he's doing during all this theme parks, video games. ER started in 1994 and went through 2009. This was the series. People are still buying it on DVDs. Today, somebody's purchasing from Amazon the entire ER series today because how many actors came out? Noah Wiley, my God, I love him, got his start in ER. Who else? Who's the most famous of everyone who is in ER? Who's the most famous,
okay.
Carl? Do you know?
So this is a trick question. Are you going to say George
yeah.
Clooney?
Yeah,
George Clooney, this is not the ER that he did first. There is a very, very short-lived series with Elliot Gould back about 6 years previous called ER that George Clooney was starring in along with Elliot Gould. Seriously, I'm not joking. So I just wanted you to know that. I always say that when people say,
"Oh
that
no, that's good." Mm-hmm. Everyone should know. No, that's a good tidbit right there. The whole thing is, if you look at this cast, you're going to see oh. all these people who you have seen from the late '90s all the way through to now. I mean, even mm-hmm. Alex Kingston, River Song was in ER.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Ah. I mean, come on.
Anthony Edwards, Eric LaSalle, Noah Wiley, so many.
Right.
Seriously.
So many. And Juliana Margulies, she even had her own, The Good Wife. She had her own series that ran
yeah.
for many, many years. I mean, and Noah Wiley, he's my favorite librarian. And he was in Falling Skies. God, that ran for 6 or 7 seasons. That was, I mean, come on. And George Clooney, I used to have a picture of George Clooney with a pushpin up behind my desk, my chair at my in my classroom. It was like, yeah, there's George Clooney. I'm feeling like crap today, but I'm looking at George Clooney. So
okay, never mind.
So anyway, Michael Crichton is the brains and the words behind ER, which is unquestionably one of the greatest series ever created on television. So where is this? So here's the sad thing. Michael Crichton, he passed away in November 2008. He had cancer. And so by the time we are here in the middle of ER, and ER kept going past his death, which is just an incredible thing for his legacy. It tells you right there that there is something about Michael Crichton, his work, his books, that just last forever, and they're worth you watching the films and reading the books. And Westworld, done by HBO, yes, it went off track. There's reasons why Westworld went off track. The first season of Westworld is wonderful. I am sure Michael Crichton would have loved the first season and even into the second season of Westworld. I'm sure of it. I've always thought that. Westworld came out in 2016. That's 8 years after his death. And still, Westworld was just like Westworld had engaging characters. It had a mystery. It had all kinds of different characters, minor characters and main characters who had a part in everything that was coming to happen. And what happened to Westworld is what happened to a lot of us. And from 2016 on through COVID, these natural disasters kept happening to us. And one of the things that happened in California was we were having these humongous wildfires. They were just happening. And the entire set of Westworld was burned down. And for a while, they couldn't even rebuild. And then once they got the okay to rebuild in the area where the sets were, the cost was prohibitive. And so they're trying to figure out how they can change the story enough to keep the story going because they got approval for a third season. The thing is that that's when COVID hit also. And so Westworld, what happened to Westworld was not really anybody's fault. And they did the best they could to keep it going in the tradition of a Michael Crichton story. But, you know, those big giant things happened. So anyway, I guess Jurassic Park and its wonderful legacy is really how Michael Crichton topped off his career, his book writing and film career. What do you think?
I agree. ER, you know, it wasn't what I watched. I know my sister liked it, actually. But the one thing I've noticed in the episodes I have seen is the characters. The characters are more defined than most, and not as as cookie cutter, you know, good guy, bad guy. They're much more nuanced. And I do like that very, very much.
Right. TV has a way of not being able to nuance. And Michael Crichton had a way of making even a minor character nuanced. He knew how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, I think this has been a wonderful episode and a first start of this series of podcasts, Vicki. I really wanted to give you a nice little applause and that. I think you've done your work really, really well.
Oh, well, thank you. It was easy, actually. I love Michael Crichton. I've read so many of his books. I've watched all of his movies, except for one, I think. I found this to be easy, actually, and a joy, because it's just sad. Somebody with so much talent being cut off. He was only 66 years old when he died, and even Ray Bradbury, who was much older, even had things to say about Michael Crichton when he died. And they were contemporaries, right? They were writing at the same time. They were, you know, in competition as all us Americans, you know, we're always in so much competition. We're so stupid that way. But anyway, even Ray Bradbury had nice things to say about Michael Crichton. And that's just another way of showing that he was as great as what I think he was. And so, yeah, it was very, very good. This was really good. And I'm looking forward to our next one. I don't know who's next. I haven't decided who's next because it'll probably be Philip K. Dick, all right? Probably. But I'm not going to put, a solid yes, it's going to be Philip K. Dick. But it might be.
Like who
but
else
there's
do you
plenty
think
of
it
others.
Might be? Who else
oh,
do you think it
other...
might be? Yeah, so.
I don't know. I'm stuck at my desk right now. I can't
think. Well, Ray Bradbury is one we'll definitely do, right?
Well, yeah. I just said him, yes. There's also, we can combine, there's a couple of authors that Hollywood latched onto two or three of their novels. Asimov is one of them. And there's a couple of others, too. But look at, they love Agatha Christie, right? Come on. Hollywood mm-hmm. just does her over and over and over again. And ask Stephen. Stephen loves Agatha Christie shows, okay, movies. And so, and maybe we should get him on for one of those.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, so I'm not sure, but I'm thinking, Philip K. Dick, Hollywood loves him so much. Come on. Blade Runner is just the tip of the iceberg. Like I said, Man in the High Castle was a really fantastic. The first season with the book, and then they went on, and I really thought they did a good job of fleshing those characters out to the end of three seasons or four seasons. I don't remember. Philip K. Dick, maybe.
Well, hopefully we'll do that next week. We will talk about that. I do want to do a quick what we call housekeeping. Tomorrow, it's been rescheduled a couple times because I've not been feeling well. But we've got a music show tomorrow at 8 o'clock. We just had President's Day, not last week, but the week before. And so we're going to do a bunch of protest songs and that for that particular show. On Thursday, it's still up in the air on Thursday what we're doing, if we're doing anything. But on Friday, Adam Ferenz and I will be doing a show on the impact of African American actors and personalities on TV, and particularly more nuanced and lesser known portrayals. And we'll be doing that on Friday evening. That will be at 8 p.m. That's what we have
Carl,
this weekend.
I have a thought about that because it's Adam. Babylon 5 and Star Trek have both utilized African-American actors. And, I know Nichelle Nichols, of course, but other actors in their one-on episodes. They've used some really fine
absolutely.
Actors.
I
hope that you're
going to
mention some of them.
Yeah, Richard Biggs, of course, from Babylon 5, and there's several African American actors in Star Trek. And of course,
yes,
Michelle Nichols. I'm not just talking about Michelle. We've got a lot of that happening. So we're going to do that on Friday, and it's nice to be back and doing stuff. It's been a little difficult for me in terms of getting myself organized down here in Memphis since I moved in December, and we haven't done as much as we would have liked, but we're back in the swing of things. So we've got a lot of things coming up, and of course, I want to remind you of this, Vicki, that this coming month is Women's History Month. So if you got any thoughts on that and any shows you want to do on that end, just let me know. We got you covered.
Okay, well, I got some negative things to say about lately, so maybe I don't want to do that.
Oh,
maybe I want to do...
no, come on. Let's get a rest from you. Seriously.
Maybe I want to do something about heroines turn hero through the 2000s, early 2000s, maybe.
Okay, well, let me know what you have in mind.
I don't know. I don't know. We're gonna do a soundtrack podcast,
yeah.
Also.
Yes, we are. And so we got a lot coming up, and just follow us at Block Talk Radio, and just type in Deviant Legion, and all our shows come up, and all our shows are archived. Again, I want to thank Vicki for coming on. I'm so glad you were here today, and we want to continue having you on the network. So you just let us know what you want to do, and I'll let you do the final goodbyes and that sort of thing, and let you finish up. So go right ahead, Vic.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for joining me on the Enchanted Kaleidoscope. I hope to do plenty more throughout 2024. This series should run 5 or 6 Hollywood's love affair with authors. 5 or 6 episodes, and then in between there will be something like soundtracks, favorite soundtracks, or soundtracks that people love so much they movies use them in their movie trailers, and who knows, maybe something for Women's Month in March. I'm born in March, so maybe that would be appropriate. Okay, well, thank you so much for listening, and have a really nice day, afternoon, evening, late night, wherever you're at, whatever you're doing. Bless you, and goodbye.
Good night, everyone. Thank you much for listening.